The Mikey Bet Show, the Mikey Bet Show, do you know the Mikey Bet Show?
Tino Antonacci made nothing but money off me. I'd be at Basta Pasta at 2 in the morning with 4 or 5 guys, we'd be off. There's no way he's going to get on the air tomorrow. No way. This one I was working from 10 to 2. Tino would go, I'll bet you $100 right now he's on the air tomorrow, and he's not, and you won't even notice that he was out. So I'd come on. Hey, everybody, Mike North here on WSCR, The Score, along with Dan Jiggets. Mike, how you doing today? I'm doing good, Jiggs. Everything going good. What'd you do last night? I was on the world tour last night. But you know me, when the red light goes on, and then we'd go to a break, I'd go, oh. And then we'd go back on. Bing, bang, boom. Right? Because nobody driving that's listening to me or any of the guys at The Score wanted to hear that shit that you're hungover. Nobody wants to hear that. Hey, everybody, we're Metallica. We're tired from last night. They don't do that. Hey, I'm Mick Jagger. We're going to put on a show if we can, but we were out late last night, right? Hey, Sinatra, last night I was drunk till 4 in the morning. We'll try to give you what you want. They just go out and do it. I live large.
Hey everybody, it's Aldo Gandhi, and I just want to let you know really quickly that our swag shop is reopened. DeepDishTees.com is where you go, and that's Tees with T-E-E-S. Clever name, guys. They're the new home of our merchandise. You can get t-shirts, you can get caps, you can get coffee mugs, you can get hoodies, you can get all sorts of good stuff, and you'll help out the bar room with the purchase. So head over to DeepDishTees.com.
Hey, this is David Kaplan from the Cap J Hood Show on ESPN 1000 and NBC Sports Chicago. Now, get ready to listen and watch to Bulls 101 with Chris and Lero. Take that, Sparkles.
What's up, guys? Good evening. Welcome to Bulls 101. Golden here with me. My name is Chris Amundson. And the Lowry thing is finally resolved. And I know you've been watching a lot of Bears stuff today. Justin Fields looking good. How you feel on this Saturday evening, my friend?
Man, I'm feeling good, man. I'm not going to get too far into Bear stuff because obviously the guy that we want to start is not going to be starting out the season. But it's still fun. Good to see some flashes from Justin. But Lowry is gone, man. I mean, and let me reel it back. I don't want to be that guy that's pounding on Lowry. And because I honestly,
you always say this right before you pound on Lowry.
I'm not even going to do that. I just want to say I wish him luck. I wish I want to see Lowry be the guy that he thinks he can be. And honestly, I mean, when you actually like dig deep into the situation, I mean, it might not be a bad fit for him, you know? So, yeah.
So listen, we're going to dig into the Lowry thing. We're talking about Derrick Jones Jr. We're going to talk about the Garpax era in opposition to the Acme era, if we're going to call it the Acme era. And I mean, there's no one I'd rather talk to about the Bulls being than Kevin Farragut. He's an old head at Bloggable. He's been on NBA Twitter for a long time. He's done his own stuff. He's now bringing back a podcast. A lot of you guys might remember Dennis Podman. So we're welcoming Kevin Farragut onto the show. Kevin, how you doing? Thanks for being with us this evening. I know it's late in Chicago, and thanks everyone for being with us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. The Bulls are back, so I can't be anything but great. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here, and appreciate you guys having me on to chop it up about the Bulls off season and about getting Lowry out of here.
as Ball Sports would, it's Dave, Big Dave from Baltimore Zoo, get in the van and ship them out. So I'm surprised. I don't know about you, Kevin, but I'm surprised that it came to an end the way it did when we'd heard reports the last few weeks that the Bulls were looking for a first round pick and expiring salary coming back. A lot of people were skeptical that we could get that value. I know before the season ended, a lot of people said the most likely option with all these teams that have cap space and there's significant interest in Lowry is that he walks for nothing. But yeah. I mean, I got to give Arturis Karnišovas credit. He has done a phenomenal job in not only reshaping this roster, but doing what seemed to be the impossible. He's now completed 4 sign-in trades this offseason, which I don't know. I tried to check with the ESPN records to see if it was a record. I've never heard of this before, but it's been wild what they've done so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The creativity of this front office in terms of CBA maneuvering and just going out and not worrying about like how are we going to get these guys, but just saying we can get them, we'll figure it out, and having a trust in their ability to maneuver in that environment, it was really impressive. It's very, very different. I think like the biggest thing I would say is that like you can only really do that if you have one, like, you know, somebody like JJ Polk, who has a really great grasp of the CBA. But I think the other big thing, and part of the reason why hiring Karnišovas and Mark Eversley has been such a help to the Bulls has been, you don't make 4 sign-in trades without relationships all over the league. Garpacks were, and I think Gar especially was fairly insular in terms of, they didn't really do a lot of deals, with, especially once Gar got into the big chair. I just think that it makes a world of difference to be plugged in and have the whole league wired the way that, Eversley and Karnišovas seem to.
I you know what, man? I totally agree with everything you just said. And I think that's something that I think people are kind of overlooking is you brought up JJ Polk. And I think someone that dude is obviously, I think, like a hidden gem. You know what I mean? Like a dude that's just in the backs, behind the scenes, like, you know, giving, you know, AK like these options, like, hey, we can use the cap in this way if you want to do it. Like, what player are you looking for? I just feel like I think that this front office has assembled itself in a way where, like, I think they're able to do things that we're not used to with the last regime. Like, I feel like AK took his time with, like, really building this front office the way he wanted to do it. And I think we're reaping the benefits because I honestly feel like it's a great team up there, and they're all, like, on the same, you know, route, the direction they're all going is they want to build this team, as a competitor as fast as they can, but in a smart way. And and some may argue that, especially, you know, you look at the DeMar DeRozan deal. Some people like attack that deal because of what they gave up to get him. But I'm of the mindset of like, you know, get the guys in here and figure it out, win some ball games, and you know, maybe you pique some of these, you know, upcoming free agents' interest to come, want to come play. And I don't think that's a bad way to go about it either. So,
absolutely. Kevin, you mentioned something interesting here that I'd kind of overlooked was those relationships around the league that the Bulls have developed that, you know, Mark Eversley was instrumental in getting DeMar DeRozan to sign. Here's a big free agent to sign. He's got contacts, I'm sure, from his Nike days, all around the league. I mean, at this point, if we sign Paul Millsap, it's over. Like, but you mentioned Gar had a unhealthy reputation around the league, especially among player agents. I mean, you saw what Jimmy Butler's agent said about Gar Foreman. He said he knew drug dealers who had better morals, which is not a great thing to have put on your tombstone one day. I'll just say that, but you know, for those, by the way, for those of you who aren't aware yet, the terms of the Lowry deal that went down was Lauri Markkanen was signed to a 4-year, $67 million contract. He got shipped out to the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavaliers sent a second round pick, which is owned by the Denver Nuggets, to us. And they sent Larry Nance Jr. to Portland. And then Portland Trailblazers, they sent a first round pick, which is lottery protected through 2028. And then becomes a second round pick or maybe a pair of seconds. I can't recall. And they also sent Derek Jones Jr. to us. So the Bulls got Derek Jones Jr., a lottery protected first round pick, and a second round pick. So, I mean, I think that's a great haul. The Blazers are pretty sure to be a playoff team, but probably going to be in that 15 to 20 pick range, I would say, unless they decide to blow it up. And I was joking on another podcast yesterday that maybe we'll end up trading back for Nance later in the year when they decide to blow it up, and it'll be a perfect trade anyway. And we'll just come out with a second round pick out of the deal. But yeah, the relationship I think is important. Just the approach of the front office has been very, very different. So I want to get into how we think Derek Jones Jr. will fit. And then also the untalked about thing that I want to talk about is the Larry Nance thing. Cause Larry Nance is a guy, several weeks ago, I put out a tweet, which is a lot of people agreed with me. Apparently I didn't think anyone thought anything about Larry Nance, but I was like, hey, you know, the perfect person to come back for Lowry would be Larry Nance. He fits perfect at the 4-5 spot. He's a good defender. He can have a lot of switchability, versatility on defense. His shot's coming around. He's a good passer. We got so close when Woj's first tweet came out. For like 10 seconds, I was like, Woj, please. Like, please let it be Larry Nance. But it ended up being Derek Jones Jr. And I was talking to Doug Tonis. Larry and I were talking to Doug Tonis and C. Red Fred about it, and thought maybe because of the fact that the deal was not expiring. And as you mentioned, Kevin, I can't remember if it was on the show or before the show, that luxury tax issue is kind of still a lurking terror for Jerry Reinsdorf. So what do you think about who we got and kind of how the parameters of the deal went down and what that means?
Yeah, so I mean, I, like you, was when I first saw that they were trading him, trading Lowry to the Cavaliers, I got really excited for about maybe a minute before the next tweet came through about what the terms of the deal were, and I was, you know, immediately responded, Larry Nance, please. I was very excited to potentially have Larry Nance. I think he's all the things you said about him, Chris. You know, versatile defender, has some playmaking juice, which, you know, I am of the opinion, you know, you can never have too many guys that can be advantage creators, and you know, even if you're not necessarily a full on advantage creator, if you're able to leverage advantages created by other folks to set up passes for your teammates, that's huge too. Like the connecting passers are, you know, that's what Lonzo Ball kind of thrives at, and I think that Larry Nance has some of that, although I think Larry Nance has a bit more getting downhill sort of juice than Lonzo, which is, you know, admittedly a low bar, but yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be Larry Nance. I was really excited about that. I get the logic of going for Derek Jones Jr. and picks. The Bulls have been shipping a lot of picks out in order to go get the guys that they wanted and targeted. And so, you know, I understand the idea of, like, you know, you can't have nothing but veterans on your team because that gets really expensive pretty quick. And so you do need to have young guys coming in on those cost controlled deals in order to build a team, unless you have an owner that's just willing to spend like Steve Ballmer or something. You know, we know that Jerry Reinsdorf has traditionally not been that guy. And so, you know, if you're going to build a winner or try to compete and be a consistent playoff team for these next 2 or 3, 4 years, while we've got this new nucleus in, you do have to have some younger guys coming in. And also, if you're, you know, potentially, if you want to go the other route and potentially trade for another more established guy, you know, I think Pat and Kobe are kind of the only young pieces on the team really right now. And that might intrigue another team. I mean, I like Troy Brown Jr. fine, but I don't think, like, I think he'd be kind of a throw in any sort of deal, consolidation deal. So you need picks to make that work. And so I get it. I think I might still rather have Larry Nance, but I get it. And I'm not mad at it. I was really excited about potentially having Larry Nance with this group. And especially where it seems like they're all kind of all in to win, to try to be a fifth or sixth seed this year. I think Larry Nance is better than Derek Jones Jr., but I don't know. I mean, Derek Jones Jr. is still a very young player and has shown some really nice flashes when he was used, I think, properly by Eric Spoelstra. I don't know that he was a great fit with what Terry Stotts was trying to do, and he kind of had a down year. So I'm interested to see what Billy has in mind for him.
I agree with that. Derek Jones Jr., I'm with you guys. I wish it was Larry Nance, obviously, because I think he's a better player, but also because, it'd be nice to have a dude named Larry on the basketball team, you know what I mean?
I see how it is.
Hey,
when Lou Amundsen was on the Knick, I was hyped. So
hey man, it'd be cool to never mind. But Derek Jones Jr., man, I am very curious to see how Billy's going to use him, because I think you're not going to get too much out of him on offense, unless it's like a oop on transition or even in half court. But defensively, he's intriguing, man, because he may be only 6'5", but he has a 7-foot wingspan. And there are some, watching some games, you'll see him, he uses that wingspan pretty well, getting in passing lanes. Dribble handoffs. He sticks his hands in there really quick and gets a quick poke in there, and gets the ball going the other way. So I think there's a lot of intrigue there with him. But I don't know about you guys, but I kind of feel like don't get me wrong, like I could see him being on this team and contributing, but I could also see him being like a piece to be used to maybe get a better player with picks or another player. But if he is on this team going forward, I think there is some room for him to be used. I think Portland maybe overextended him, because I do think they tried to use him as like they relied on him as like more of a big time point of attack defender. And I think it kind of didn't work out as well as they thought it would. But I think with, having Caruso here, Lonzo, you can kind of like still use him sparingly in different spots. Just kind of switch it up, and I think he could be a little bit more effective here with the lesser role. So that's just how I feel.
Yeah, I agree, Lero. I think what's nice about this deal is Derek Jones Jr. is good enough to be a rotation player, and he's definitely useful to what we're trying to do. We definitely need some more front court help and wing help in general, and especially on defense. And it's nice to have another lob target for Lonzo in transition. It's going to be Lonzo, Pat, DeMar, and Zach, with like, take your pick. You got three dunk champions, slam dunk champions in that group. But also, you have the optionality with the expiring contract, and now with the addition of these picks, to move him for something else if need be. So I like the forward thinking by the front office on this, where you can kind of go both ways. And he's only 24, and he showed out with the Heat. He was pretty useful for the Heat. He's the same age as Lowry, basically. So I don't see why he couldn't be someone that could be useful on the long term if need be. But he's someone that you could also move at the deadline, as Kevin said, additional salary and something to move up and get a better player. So we'll see where we're at here. Now the size is interesting to me. He is 6'5". I know Cleaning the Glass lists him at 6'7", so I'm not sure really what size he is. But if you look at him, he is long and lanky. He kind of reminds me of Justin Holiday a little bit in that kind of frame he's got. He's pretty good at the point of attack. He's a good on-ball defender, and as you mentioned, Lero, he can get into passing lanes. He is real skinny. Sometimes he'll get caught on screens. I was watching some clips. Our friend Tim Ross was showing some clips to us earlier this week of him being screened by Steven Adams. And now that's probably an unfair comparison because Steven Adams is like a freaking massive brick wall. Beast. That man could set some screens. I've seen him set screens at half court when someone wasn't expecting it and like concussion protocols were had. So I won't hold it against him for that one, but he's got to use his frame and his length and his kind of quickness in order to make up for that size and the lack of weight. So the question really becomes, is he more in the mold of Troy Brown Jr. as far as what his position is going to be and role on the defensive end? Or is he going to slot into power forward in spots, not only as a small ball power forward, but like what other options do we have besides Pat and DeMar at that point?
Yeah, I think I was just going to say, I think that like the team, if you look at like where he's played his minutes, you know, in his career so far, he's predominantly been a shooting guard, small forward, which is interesting because he can't really shoot. And he does have that crazy long wingspan. But I think his two most successful seasons were both in Miami, and they utilized him as a power forward more than anywhere else that he's played. And so I think that you'll probably see him in that spot some. I think also it just seems like looking at the roster construction that AK's philosophy, and I think you maybe see this a little bit too with like the Nuggets, the way that they were built, is it seems like they just look at the three and the four as relatively interchangeable positions where they just want big wings. And they're gonna put big wings in either of those two spots and be pretty happy to be interchangeable in that way. And I honestly think to get into like a little bit of with the roster being what it is, I think from a scheme perspective, they're probably gonna want to do some kind of like maybe one through four switch scheme with a drop for Vooch, just because like obviously you don't want Vooch switching, but like all the other guys are going to be pretty long, pretty good one-on-one defenders. I don't think that there's anybody like even DeMar. I mean, I think his problems defensively aren't necessarily when he's on ball. It's more all the other stuff. You know, if you screen him or get him involved in a lot of action or whatever, then he kind of gets lost, or, you know, maybe he doesn't give the best effort because, he's relied on to do so much offensively. I just think that that's probably going to be the scheme that makes the most sense. So I'm interested to see if that's the way that Billy goes, or if he has a different, probably better idea because he's Billy Donovan and I'm just some jerk on the internet. But
hey, you're all jerk on the internet, Kevin.
Yeah, that's like at like a very basic sort of level. I think that they probably will have to switch a lot to maximize sort of, because they do have like a good sort of like they have a bunch of good plus defenders now, because I think everybody was like, oh, they're going to be like a bottom 10 defense, and I was like, I don't think so. Like they have
I don't know where people are getting this idea.
Like Billy has never had a below average defense ever. I mean, granted, you know, some of that is personnel, but like in the NBA his worst defense I think has been like 11th or 12th in the league, and like the man knows how to coach a defense, and I think that scheme matters a ton. I think he's flexible when it comes to matching scheme to personnel. I had some problems with Billy's, some of his lineup choices last year, but I don't think that he's bad at scheme at all. And I think that he'll figure out a way to, honestly, even some of my lineup criticisms, I like sat down and actually went through the exercise one time of like trying to find lineups with the roster that we had last year that like met all of the criteria that I met all the criteria of like the things that I complain about. And I was like, oh no, it's impossible. Like to have like a lineup where you don't have multiple negative defenders, that you always have a star on the floor, and that like you're not playing Kobe and Lowry at the same time because they were such negative impacts on the defense, it was impossible. Like, you like to have like the guys get the minutes that they needed. It there was just no way to do it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm just a jerk because I'm like complaining about these lineups, and it's like,
that's right.
Exactly. But you know, I mean, I think that they're gonna they have a lot of plus defenders now. I think Lonzo's a good defender, like a really good defender actually. I think he's solid on ball and off. I think Zach has gotten to a place where he's maybe not a plus defender, but he's like certainly not like damaging in the way that he used to be. And Vooch, I think, gets a lot of unfair stick for not being a good defender. Like, he's a really good defensive rebounder. He's good positionally. He's not out of place a lot. Like, he's fine in a scheme. Like, yeah, are there going to be guys that are going to be able to, like, if they get him on, you know, in an isolation, are they going to cook him? Sure. But like, that's most centers in the league. And then like, DeMar is legitimately like a pretty negative impact defender, but like, he's one guy. I don't think he's going to single-handedly like tank the defense. And you know, Pat has to live up to accelerate his timeline defensively, I think, quite a bit, if they want to be a really good defense. But like, they had a like worse defensive personnel last year than they do this year, and they were a good defense. Like, they were much better defensively than offensively.
Yeah, man. For like Pat, man, I early in
the magic word. Huh? Lara loves talking about Pat. That's his guy.
He's fun to talk about.
So like
he's so fun.
Coming into like last season, like, I'm like, dude, I think I got hung up on the is he a three, is he a four thing, and I've gotten over that. And it's like, dude, if he's a four, it doesn't matter. Like, the game has changed, you know. So, but I really feel like putting Pat in the four position, like going back and watching a lot of like, I watched maybe one. Maybe two games in college, and he was a really good weak side rim protector. And I think like if he can get back to that and being that secondary rim protector, and I think he could bring this defense to even another level. Like,
just play that Ayton block on repeat where he just grabs it out of Ayton's grabs a lob out of Ayton's hands.
Yeah,
dude, and. To me, like, just watching the season, like, if Pat can, if he can stay like, you know, consistent where he was shooting the ball last season, maybe with a little bit more volume now that he'll probably have a lot more open shots because of this team this season. But defensively, I think you're right, Kevin. If he can accelerate his defensive side of the ball to his game, I mean, I think this will help this team like a ton. So, I'm just happy to see him at the four and see what he can do from that position, especially against, you know, because teams are going to have to figure out a way. Is there a way we can get him out from being the low man and get him away from pick and roll situations? And if he can be that guy that can help protect the rim, and that's something I think DJJ is good at as well. Is getting over and using those bunnies and tipping the, you know, ball away on the oops and things like that. So I think when you looked at like, and before I say this, nobody's Jonathan Isaac on this on like as the four defensively, you know, when he's healthy. But like, if you look at those like strong defenses that Orlando had, they had that those backside defenders for Vooch in that drop scheme, and I think with the combination of, you know, even Lonzo is such an intelligent defender as well off ball. Like, you have guys that can help Vooch out in those situations. And I'm just excited to see how, like you said, the scheme will go next season.
Yeah. You make some really good points. And I was looking at it before we even talked. I was looking at the lineups and I was like, I don't think they have anyone under 6'5" on this roster for guards. Like, Caruso and Kobe are both 6'5", or at least listed as 6'5". Lonzo, Pat, and they've got a lot of versatility from one to three and partially four, right? It's that 4-5 spot is the only thing I think is kind of the hole they need to plug. But there, I think you're right, Kevin. A switching scheme 1 through 4 could really work. And Zach has really improved. If you watch him, I know it's the Olympics, but he has improved all year long. And at the Olympics, he was like legitimately their second best perimeter defender behind Jrue Holiday. Like, he was into guys. I agree.
Yeah,
go for it.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just chiming in just to say I agree. The Olympic stuff was really, encouraging.
Yeah.
He's going to get a big boost from that, I think. And one thing I was talking with someone about as far as the starting lineup, the point of attack defense. So Lonzo is not as good at the point of attack as he is a help defender, I think, because I know we've talked about this, like hips and getting caught on the screens and things like that. But DeMar and LaVine are going to be the people they're trying to target, and in pick and rolls. But I think LaVine on ball as an on ball defender, put him in pick and roll, because that means you've got Pat and Lonzo on help. Like that puts us in the best position to succeed.
Yeah,
DeMar and if Zach can be a better and continuing better off ball defender, the only bad guy in that lineup is DeMar on defense. Because as you said, Vooch can hold his own in a scheme. He's not a great rim protector, but he can hold his own. And Zach can hold his own. He's no longer an active detriment to your defense. So I think that people haven't caught up with this. I think like Tim Bontemps from ESPN, I keep listening to him for some reason, tell me that the Bulls aren't going to make the playoffs. They're going to get the 12th seed. They're going to be below 500. They're going to be a bottom five defense. Nate Duncan said they're going to be a bottom 10 defense.
Oh, I don't listen.
Man,
to
they finished eighth. Well, I know. I try and get opposing voices every once in a while just to check myself. But I'm going through this roster. I'm like, how are they going to finish in the bottom 10 of defense? They got Alex Caruso, who is one of the absolute best point of attack defenders in the NBA. Lonzo is a great help defender, and that was their biggest weakness last year. And they were eighth in defense after the trade, eighth for the second half of the year.
I just want to touch on the Caruso thing really quick, because like no doubt was it easier for Caruso on that Lakers team to be as aggressive as he was to get over the screens because of Anthony Davis and LeBron and others on the team. But like, just if you literally just sit and watch his technique and how he uses his hands and moves his hips and gets skinny around screen, that's not Anthony Davis, that's not LeBron James, that's technique. And I think that is Caruso, that's what he's good at. I don't think it's fair to discredit him because of what he had on that Lakers team. I think if you just literally just watch him and his technique, like you'll see that that's something he's bringing. That's not something I think he's going to start, get in the game. You're like, whoa, where is that same Caruso? I think you're going to still see that same intense, aggressive, technical way of getting over screens and always being in guys. Like, I just love that. Like, he doesn't get talked about enough. I understand DeMar and Lonzo are the big time guys, but like Caruso deserves his due. I think he's just somebody who's going to impact winning for this team so much.
Yeah. Caruso, there's, if you go on YouTube, I think a lot of you guys, if you're watching this, you're already on YouTube, maybe. But if you open another window and wait until the show is over, and go into YouTube and search for Alex Caruso defensive highlights, there's like this 11-minute video of him, and it's just like him on point of attack defense, and it's like a clinic. Like he is like almost a savant level backwards mover, like the way that he mirrors guys. And beats them to spots, and like, it's, I hate to gush over him too much, because it's like Lakers fans have done that for a really long time. There's also a certain kind of fan that like gets a little too into Alex Caruso for reasons that I'm not going to really get into, but he is like really like defensive genius when it comes to his ability to, as Laro mentioned, like his screen avoidance is great. I think that's also, I want to say real quickly, like just as an aside, screen avoidance seems like something that the Bulls have started like looking for in terms of the people that they're targeting. There it is. Like that's one of Io's best traits, I think, defensively, is like you cannot screen Io. Like it is really, really hard to hit him with a clean screen, because he is just avoiding that screen action at all times. And Caruso is excellent at that. But Caruso, the thing that really stands out to me is just how good he is at moving backwards and then closing space, like giving guys space and then closing that space yes. as soon as they pick up the ball or, you know, make a decision that is that takes them away from their ability to change their mind. Like once they've committed, he's up in their face. And it's really a lot of fun to watch. And if you appreciate defense, and you know, I know a lot yes. of people don't, but I enjoy it.
I was gonna say, like, I am a strong defensive fundamental appreciator. Like, and most people, it's not, no one's gonna get excited on YouTube about that except me and a few other people, but this is why I liked Wendell Carter so much, is because fundamentally he was just so sound on defense of where he was positioned and when, that even though he didn't have the flashy blocks and, you know, that kind of stuff, and he isn't a huge leaper or whatever, he prevents so many plays from ever happening. And that's Alex Caruso is going to do that. But Alex Caruso will also get the highlight plays, but he's just constantly in the right position. And Lonzo, another guy on help defense, Lonzo anticipates and just has this really, really high feel for where the offense is going to go, when they're going to commit, when they're going to pass. And having a couple of guys like that on your team is going to do wonders for this defense. Now, I know people are going to say, you lost Daniel Tice, who was a great defensive player, and you lost Thaddeus Young, who was a great defensive player. I agree. That's still a need. That's the hole I think we have to fill. But, you know, Tony Bradley is an upgrade from what we had the backup earlier in the year with Gafford. I love Gafford, but his positioning was not sound on the Bulls, and he was usually out of position chasing blocks. I think he improved a bit on the Wizards, and I think he has the ability to be a great defensive player and a good rotation player. But Tony Bradley's already better on the defensive end, I think, from that standpoint. You know, and as the only thing I really worry about is Vooch going down with an injury, because we're really kind of SOL on that. So kind of using that to transition to the next topic, what do you think this roster still needs, and who would you target if anyone's even available at this point to fill it?
Yeah, so I actually spent a little time the other, I think it was yesterday, going to SpotTrack and looking at like the available free agents in the front court. It's
depressing.
it's not great, man. It's really, it's rough out there. I mean, the name that, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, and I'll continue to say it, and there's a connection because of the Denver thing, but is Millsap. I think he's probably the best guy available that's left over. I might have seen something today that maybe, or it might have been a fake Woj tweet, I don't know, or like a fake rumor, I don't know, but I thought I saw something about him potentially going to the Nets, which would you know, be a bummer, but I would get it because, you know, he's getting up there, and, you know, maybe ring chasing seems more appealing than coming and being, you know, a final piece to a team that's, you know, I think the Bulls are going to be a lot more fun. They're going to win a lot more games this year, but you know, I'm not fooling myself. This is not a title contender. I think sort of the very top end ceiling is maybe a Hawks style run to the conference finals. But you know, anything beyond that would be like astronomical odds. Yeah. So I could see Millsap maybe not necessarily wanting to come here for something like that. But after that, it gets pretty tough. I saw that I think he was just on the Sixers. Tolliver was just released. He's not, he wouldn't be a terrible option. I think he's like fine as a depth big, and like he can shoot, which is nice. And he's like, I think not terrible positional defender, but I'll be honest, I haven't watched Anthony Tolliver super closely in a while. And also he barely played last year. I think he played like less than 100 minutes. You know, he's maybe a guy I might take a flyer on. Ed Davis is out there, I think. Mm-hmm. I've always been a pretty big Ed Davis fan. He's just like a guy that has been persistently underpaid for reasons that escape me his entire career. Like, nobody ever wants to give Ed Davis the bag, but he just like consistently gets these cheapo contracts and outperforms them every year, which, you know, respect, I guess. But he's still out there. Nobody wants to take a run at Ed Davis, I guess. I wonder with the Ed Davis thing, if it's just like his name sounds really boring, so people are just like that he's like getting screwed over by like his name not being like interesting enough. I don't know. That's like a little harebrained theory that I'm going to throw out about Ed Davis.
Yeah, it's not like underrated forever. I mean, you're going to sign a guy named Bones Highland over Ed Davis, right? Just for the name itself, right?
Well, and Bones, to be fair, also is going to be awesome. I was looking at his rookie of the year odds until some Nuggets fans talked me out of it, because they were like, they're like, he's not going to get any minutes because their coach Mike Malone. Or Michael, he gets really mad if you call him Mike. Michael Malone,
right.
He like hates playing rookies any minutes at all. But Bones, I just think, is going to be such a bucket, and they're going to need scoring with Murray out, that I think it might be too hard to keep him off the floor. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my Bones Highland digression. But I like Bones a lot.
Yeah, Bones is a
my fault. Man. My fault.
He was great in summer league. Like,
yeah.
All fine. The questions about whether, like, because he's so skinny, whether that was going to translate to against NBA athletes. It's like, no, he's good.
Yeah, I think, man, looking at that list of free agent bigs is not, man. You know, this 23-year-old Harry Giles. You know, maybe is. His knees are doing okay, and
I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah, you know, I looked at him like maybe, you know what I mean. Man, it's tough, and it's why I listening to Chris and you as well, like getting Larry Nance would have been so huge, you know. Yeah. And man, it's but you know what, man. You need somebody that can come in that's just not going to be, it's not going to be a negative, man. It's just maybe somebody that could be just – that gives you a few minutes that is not going to hurt you. There's going to be good positionally on defense and be able to make sound decisions on offense in terms of making the – just keeping the train moving, you know. But, gosh, man, I don't know. Like, that's why it makes me wonder, like – would they think about, you know, moving DJJ with somebody to grab something better? But, you know, who knows?
And I don't want to start the, like, always holding Larry Nance against Derrick Jones Jr. train going. Like, I'm not going to be that guy. It didn't happen. So it is what it is. But I think Ed Davis is a good name. I thought of once, and I was like, oh, maybe he signed somewhere because he didn't end up on a list. Harry Giles is – as like a third power forward, kind of insurance, I think could work. Isaiah Hartenstein, he's a center, but
I like him.
He's a good buy low candidate as well. I've heard Mike Scott. I have not heard great things about it, but that's that's the list.
Yeah, all of my friends that like the Sixers have been like, love Mike Scott. Great guy to have on your team, but he can't play anymore. And like, this has been like 2 or 3 years running of like, Mike Scott can't see the floor. Like, keep him on the bench. We love you, Mike Scott, but you can't play.
My goodness, yeah. Man. Yeah.
It's wild.
It's tough, man. It's a tough situation. Like, let me ask you this. This is a very crazy thought. Okay, Kevin. Marco, how do you feel about Marco?
I like him. He was very sort of inconsistent, I would say, in summer league, which, you know, it's a very small sample size, so I'm not going to get like too worked up about it, especially like my rules for summer league. I've had these for going back for a few years now, but my rules for summer league are I don't really read a lot into it for rookies. Like, playing better is obviously better than not playing well. But, you know, I usually don't think you can take a ton away from summer league for most guys. Unless, like, the question was, like, can they play against NBA athletes? And, like, they clearly show that they can. And like with Bones, like that was one of my questions with him is like, he's so skinny. How is he going to hold up against like NBA level athletes consistently? And like, oh, turns out the answer is like, he's going to get his buckets regardless. But for the most part, I don't read into it too much for rookies. And I think the other thing is that like for, especially for sort of the European players, Summer League is kind of a free for all. And a lot of the guys that come over from Europe are used to playing in a very sort of structured environment that is much more akin to what you end up with once you get into the regular season. So like there's a lot of getting up and down. And I know I do think that the Bulls are going to try to push the pace this year, especially like with Lonzo throwing, you know, those hit aheads and outlet passes. But I think that Marco will look better in a more structured environment than what we saw at Summer League. And I also just think that like he was a really good player on like a quality European league at a pretty young age. I don't know if he'll be great like this year.
Yeah,
but I think that guys that are teenagers that compete against men in European leagues that and do well there are pretty good bets in general. I think, you know, expecting him to be a big minute guy is probably wishful thinking, but like I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being able to play like over the course of the season, you know, 800 minutes or something like that. Like, so that it would average out to like 10 minutes a game or something. That wouldn't shock me. I wouldn't bet on it necessarily, but like I could see that for him. Like, I just think that he's a good role man. He's, you know, he's a pretty good shooter. Didn't necessarily flash that as much in the Summer League as I would have liked to have seen. But you know, again, with 3-point shooting, especially small sample sizes, I don't worry about that. He's shown to be a good shooter for most of his career. The defense is a little bit concerning. I do worry about him a little bit athletically, but he seems like one of those guys that just kind of knows how to play. I think he's got some of the stuff that Lowry has, but I think he has a little bit more nasty to him than Lowry did. Like, that was like the biggest thing with Lowry is like, you're 7 feet tall and you don't rebound or block shots or like really want to get into guys despite all those like you know, all the glamour muscles that you got. I don't know, Lowry, that was the things that drove me crazy about Lowry is like you have like all this stuff going for you,
yeah,
and you're not aggressive on either end, and he just kind of floats. And I feel like Marco is maybe not as just raw talent, doesn't maybe have it like Lowry did, but I think he's got a better mentality. And I don't necessarily like, it's a little unfair to just be like, oh, it's the white European stretch four, so let's compare them to one another. But like, he is also kind of filling that spot on the team. And I don't know that he'll be, like I said, great right away, but I think he can play. And, you know, I think eventually he'll, you know, he'll be a rotation NBA player, which is good for where they got him. They got him in like the 40s.
Yeah.
I'm awesome. The reason why I asked that,
a couple
just,
of the
comments. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
No. Finish your thought on Marco, because there was a couple comments about different options that I wanted to look into.
No, so I was just thinking out loud because honestly, who could you get? Like, is Noah Vonleh still available?
I think he is.
Should be.
I mean,
he's like not a bad player. I don't know why Noah Vonleh like can't stick anywhere, because like I every time I watch him, I'm like, he's not terrible. Like he's got a little bit of stuff to him, and like especially like so many guys like with his draft pedigree get like a million chances, and like it seems like he kind of got like two, and then people were like, nah, he stinks. It's like, what? He wasn't bad when he was on the Bulls, like for what he was. Like, he was a bench big, but like he played capably in the minutes that he played. I never was like mad to see Noah Vonleh out there. I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't hate him either. But like, yeah, you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Like, none of these guys are probably moving the needle appreciably, which is why, like, you know, I the Bulls roster kind of is basically what it's going to be, I think. You know, the name that we, the last name that we might sign might get us marginally more excited. But like, you know, the only one that I see maybe being a slight needle mover is Millsap. And even with him, he's like, he's not the Paul Millsap that, that we all kind of have in our heads anymore, or at least not the one that, I remember.
So there has been one name that we've been linked to by Casey Johnson, which is LaMarcus Aldridge. If in fact he does get medically cleared and allowed back to the NBA, there was some there's some interest there reported. I don't know how you guys feel about that one, but I'm not sure about that. I don't know if, how that helps us defensively. Number one, LaMarcus is a skilled offensive player, but he also doesn't really shoot for more than mid range. And the minutes that he and DeMar had on the Spurs were always really bad together specifically. Like DeMar's like plus minus. People always like, well, he didn't really help the team. Like he wasn't a positive impact, but if you take LaMarcus Aldridge out of those minutes, it's actually, it's actually really good. It was kind of like the LaVine thing. Like LaVine playing with all the starters this year was terrible. And then the bench would come in and it's like, oh, our bench is like plus 13 over in like 300 minutes. Like what's going on here? The other one was Jared Vanderbilt. So Jared Vanderbilt, I would love to have as a restricted free agent. He, if he doesn't cost him much, but I don't know what Minnesota's going to do at power forward if they don't sign him to something. They don't really have much going on there. I think they got McDaniels, and that's it, maybe? Let's see.
I don't know what their roster is like.
They haven't done much, to be honest.
Yeah, I know that their reporting was out there that they were like in hot pursuit of Ben Simmons, and it seems like, I don't know if like Gershon Rosas is having trouble like trying to execute a trade and chew gum at the same time, but like your team is not good enough, my guy. Like you need to make some improvements. Like you're on the hot seat. Like I know everybody's excited about Anthony Edwards, and so am I. I think he's a lot of fun, but he's not like a good NBA player yet. Like he's a good scorer, but like in terms of impacting winning, he's not there yet. And like your other guy is Karl Anthony Towns, who is, you know, a great individual talent, but hasn't really moved the needle at this point yet. And then like the rest of the team is just a bunch of guys, and like D'Angelo Russell, who gets paid a whole bunch of money to be not very good. Like I don't know, that's the other thing is like if they're like in hot pursuit of Ben Simmons, like for what though? Like what are you moving? Are you trading Anthony Edwards? Because I think that might cause a riot in Minnesota. So I don't know.
Yeah, Salim.
Yeah, they don't have they don't have much at the power forward position, so they do probably need to bring him back.
I mean, McDaniels showed a lot of flashes, so I think that maybe that's their plan. McDaniels and they slide Torian Prince, and hopefully they're looking to sign Vanderbilt to a really, hey, the market is dry, you're a restricted free agent kind of contract. But I think I agree with you, Kevin. The roster is basically, it is what it is at this point, other than Millsap. And Millsap is like 15 to 20 minutes of insurance on a nightly basis for like a Vooch thing. So maybe I know we've probably talked about this ad nauseum over the last couple of shows because it's like, it's free agency is kind of done. And other than Lowry trade, nothing's really happened for a little bit. So I wanted to get into something a lot more fun and something I know you have a lot of strong opinions on, which is the Garpax era of decision-making versus what's now been, you know, a year and a few months of Karnišovas and Mark Eversley making decisions. And so just wanted to hear, first of all, your take on AK and Mark Eversley and the job that they've done so far kind of overall. Nate Duncan, who is your favorite, gave them a D so far in their performance. And Danny LaRue said they basically failed as executives to this point. So I wanted to see if you had some more thoughts to that.
I mean, those guys are clowns to me. Like I don't put a lot of value on what those guys have to say. They, they contribute a lot of negativity to NBA discourse, I think. And I think they're very concerned with sounding smart. And, you know, sounding smart to them means if you're not trying to win a title, then you should just try to, you know, blow your team up all the time and never build anything and only try to get young guys and draft picks and leverage your cap space to get more young assets and not play your pay your players anything, because why do players deserve money? They only create the game. So anyways, I don't agree with that at all. I think that the only trade that was like, or the only move that was remotely like questionable was giving up Thad and a first round pick plus two more seconds to sign DeMar to the deal that they signed him to. You know, my initial reaction to that was first I was excited because we were getting DeMar DeRozan, and then I didn't like, I hadn't seen like what the terms of the deal were. And when I saw the terms of the deal, my initial reaction, because I have been programmed by NBA media, like the guys that you mentioned, to, you know, think in those terms, was to be like, oh, that's kind of a lot. But then the other part of my brain kicked in and I was like, we got a really good player who's very talented, who does something that we really need, which is get to the line, because the Bulls were not very good at that for most of last year. He pressures the rim, which again, the Bulls struggled with outside of Zach. And even Zach shoots so many threes that like he's not consistently applying pressure to the rim in the way that you might like. And he's also become an excellent playmaker. So we got a guy that fits with what we needed. Did we overpay him? Probably, but like, I don't really care. It's not my money. I don't think that DeMar DeRozan is going to be like completely unmovable at that number. And I think that also like you're trying to, I think that like so much of the discussion around like, player contracts is gross for a lot of reasons. But I also just think it's not that smart. Like a lot of these guys that like talk about these things in a vacuum or look at deals in a vacuum, or don't like consider the fact that like the talent the market for talent in the NBA is not like, is incredibly illiquid. Like it's not, you don't have your choice of whatever player you want at whatever number you want. Like there's only so many guys that can do what DeMar DeRozan does. In the league, there's only so many that were available this offseason. And in fact, there was one, and it was DeMar DeRozan. And yeah, you can say that they overpaid him, but like they wanted to build a better team right away. And you can argue with the logic of that. I think it's fine because the Bulls are in one of the great markets in the country, and they have not acted like it for a very long time, for basically my entire adult life. And I think that they are trying to do a version of what the Nets did by leveraging where they're at, and the fact that they do have the Nets didn't even have a star player. Like the Bulls have Zach LaVine, who players around the league respect and want to play with. And they are saying, all right, we're going to try to get us to a place where we're winning more games so we can attract more talent. And they've proven that they are going to be aggressive about going and getting talent. And they're not worried about, you know, all the future assets and all of that sort of thing. They're trying to build a winner now. And is it going to be a title team? Maybe not, but like there's value in having an entertaining product and getting people excited about your team, getting players excited about your team and treating players well. And, you know, DeMar DeRozan is another guy that like players around the league, you know, you can, you know, do all the analytics you want. And I'm certainly a guy that has read a lot and, you know, I pay attention to the analytics. Don't get me wrong. Like that's a lot of how I think about the game, but like, it's also at the end of the day, it's a people business and players respect DeMar DeRozan. And you could try to penny pinch DeMar DeRozan and one, you're probably not getting him if you do that, but also players aren't going to love that if you're squeezing him because you're like, well, there's not really, you know, actually that big of a market for you, DeMar. So we're going to pay you $8 million a year less than what you want. I don't know. I just, so much of it is just, I think it's just really, it's silly the way that people talk about this stuff. And I have been banging this drum basically since the Bulls traded Jimmy Butler, that I just want a team that is competitive, that wins at least as much as it loses, and, you know, get me to the playoffs and give me a fun series, and, you know, have some of these national podcasts actually talking about my team and what they're doing on the court and not being like an embarrassment. And my coach is like putting in punch clocks and stuff. Like, like, I think that there's value in all of that. And I just think that to dismiss that and say, well, they overpaid DeMar DeRozan and they sent out a lot of draft picks. Mind you, the Bulls just used a whole decade's worth of first round draft picks. And they came up with Butkus. Nothing. and I trust Karnišovas and Eversley to find talent on the margins. And if you can do that, draft picks don't matter that much. Look at what the Heat have done. Like, the Heat gave away all their picks for so long, and who cares? they go out and they get the guys that they want. They manipulate the cap and they probably tamper a whole lot. but apparently so do the Bulls now, which is also like, okay, cool. That's big market energy, baby.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I said.
Big market energy.
Hey.
Man, Kevin, I got to record while we're recording this, but I got to just take that snippet of that rant. It was beautiful. Because you just hit on so many good points. But.
Yeah, Cooper pilled. Just like, you made like Chris just said, you made so many good points. But like the one point you made about, man, you just want to turn on the TV and see a good product on you know, and I just look back at like the Bulls Celtics playoffs round one 2009. Like, yes, we didn't win that series, but like what Bulls fan didn't love watching that series and being like, you know, one of the best playoff series me personally, I've ever seen, you know. And but again, like, I still don't think this team is first round exit. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, the fun of being able to know, like, this team, our team is going to be in the playoffs. And once you get in the dance, man, like, you never know, you know. Like, for instance, like, who would ever thought Trae Young was going to turn his ankle on a ref? Like that, stuff like that, like, you just never know, man. And just get in the dance, and you got studs, and as PJ Tucker said in the parade, you got three dogs. You got three dogs now. So let's do it. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, I'm excited, man.
I mean,
Salim breaks. Sorry,
I was just gonna say they're like everybody that I talk to about the Bulls, like, from the, you know, the most analytics people, which I guess amongst Bulls fans is like me and Stefan know, versus like the like more casual fans, like, everybody's excited about the Bulls. That's not a D off season, no matter like how you cut it. Like, it, and people say, oh, you're just winning the press conference. They got a lot more talent. Like, I just don't understand this idea that like getting better players and trying to build a better team is dumb or bad. Like, I it's just the way that people talk about, like, it's an entertainment product. It's not like, it's an entertainment product, and not every, like, one team wins the championship every year. Having a team that is good and fun, fun to watch and wins a fair amount of games is worth it. Like, I don't pay attention to this stuff only to win a championship. If I did that, I'd only tune in when the team was like winning 60 games with Tom Thibodeau. Like, that would have been the only time that I would have given a crap about them, but I don't. I watch them every year. Yeah. So I would like them to be, you know, a team that's worth watching.
I love the criticism of like, well, I mean, what are the Bulls going to do? Win 50 games and be a second round exit? Yeah, 25 teams in the league would love to be in that position. Yes, yeah. please let us be a 51 team and a second round exit. I would love that.
Yeah, no. I mean, the only thing that I'm concerned about is that if they end up like in that 8 or 9 seed range and then like lose out in the play in, like that would be crushing.
Oh yeah.
Well, because Zach would probably go bye-bye.
I think Zach is I think he's happy in Chicago. I think he was consulted and actively involved in making a lot of the connections with the players to make these things happen. I think he's in lockstep, and I think him switching over to Clutch is a sign that Zach is about his paper now. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. he gets the most money staying in Chicago. And I don't think that Clutch would be too mad to have one of their new shiny new clients in the third largest market in the country. And a market that, unlike the other two, is unshared.
Mm.
Yep.
Mm.
I like it's amazing. Big market energy. That's gonna. I'm gonna change my Twitter name to Big Market Energy right now. In fact, that's how perfect this is. But so let's talk about the difference between that and the excitement that, as you said, everybody, every Bulls fan I've talked to, and a lot of people I trust around the league that aren't national media, but like smart people that I trust, are all really excited about the Bulls, which is a big change. I was telling Kevin before the show, I've been a Bulls fan since like the 2013-14 season. I have never seen good basketball played by the Bulls. the best Bulls season we had was when Derrick Rose hit the game winner against the Cavs. And then we ended up losing that series and Tom Thibodeau got fired. So it's like, that's the height of my Bulls fandom so far. I'm really freaking excited for the season.
Man,
look how far we've come, though, from the Garpax and the Jim Boylan era of basketball. And so I wanted to ask you, Kevin, on a lighter note, and maybe also on like a dagger to my heart note, what were your favorite moments from the Garpax era, whether it be decisions that they did or events or what have you?
So favorite, well, I can tell you the ones that drove me the most insane. So number one, trading Jimmy Butler because they were too afraid to try to win with a guy that was a top 10 player in the league in his prime. They were afraid that they just were so incapable. And like, if you have like a guy as good as Jimmy Butler and he's 27, I think at the time, and you look at him and say, I can't win with that guy, I can't build around him, you should just quit your job. Like you should, like then you don't belong in that chair. You should quit your job. And like eventually, Paxson quit his job or tried to quit his job.
Fired himself, by the way.
Yeah,
he fired himself.
Fired himself, and then they got Gar out of there. But like, if your solution to like have the problem of having somebody as good as Jimmy Butler on your team is to trade him away, you should quit. You should not do this for a living because you're bad at your job. And that was my thought. They netted out no first round picks in that trade, by the way. They did a pick swap.
Amazing. And they couldn't even keep the 16th pick in that trade. Amazing. Yeah.
Which that could have been a good player. I mean, the guy that the Timberwolves drafted, Justin Patton, turned out to be nothing, but like that could have been a guy. Like there were good players drafted after 16 in that draft. I think John Collins might have been drafted after 16. In any case, so that was number one. That really almost made me quit caring about the Bulls. And I'll be honest, I cared less than for like in the post Jimmy period. Like I still watched because what else am I going to do? Number two, very close, which also made me lose my mind and was a sign of things to come, unfortunately, was trading two mid first round picks to move up to draft Douglas McDermott. God,
buckets.
Yeah, I
which those two picks were Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic, by the way.
Oh, Nurkic. Oh.
Yeah,
those two guys wouldn't have been good for us at all.
Yeah, I was very upset about that. Like McDermott was like the one guy that was like projected to go in the first round that I didn't want at all in that draft with either of the two picks, and they used both of them to get him. And Doug has turned out to have like a pretty okay career, but like not worth two first round picks. Good. And certainly not on that Bulls team. Took him a while to, you know, get to the point where he was, you know, not such a huge negative on defense. So that was pretty terrible. And then I think the last one, the last in sort of the top three was saying that they were going to get younger and more athletic.
Oh.
And then citing, and then their idea of building around, and this is what precipitated the Jimmy Butler trade, but building around Jimmy Butler, a guy who all you have to do is give him the ball and put shooters around him. That's literally, like, I wrote it in 2015 when Derrick Rose got hurt again, that the Bulls should give the ball to Jimmy Butler and let him basically be James Harden.
Yep. I remember that article.
I am again just a bozo on the internet, but I saw that, and the Bulls couldn't figure out that, like, if you give Jimmy the ball and put shooters around him, good things happen. And they brought in two what I deemed Rondo and Wade in that season. I called them floor pinchers instead of floor spacers because they just cramped everything. And Jimmy's jump shot hadn't completely abandoned him yet at that point, but Jimmy's never been like an elite like outside shooter. He's the guy that like uses the space everybody else creates and bulldozes his way into the rim. Or like sprays it out for a pass.
But you know what? Not to cut you off, but like when you what you just said about him not being an elite shooter is whenever Jimmy had the ball at the end of the game and he took a three or whatever it was, I always thought it was going in. I don't know what it was.
The LeBron shooting, right? LeBron is terrible shooter until it's like really time to have him make a shot, and he's like, "Oh, I'll hit whatever step back three is required."
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, now Jimmy is like, for his time in Chicago, Jimmy was consistently like one of the more clutch players in the league. And, you know, he had a 40-point triple-double in a finals game. Like, guy you can't win with, apparently.
LeBron went supernova in the finals, and Jimmy Butler outplayed him.
Yeah.
On those games, like, it was amazing to me. And people were like, oh, Miami's a fluke. Yeah, but the Lakers took six games to beat the Miami Heat, who had two of their best three players injured the whole time.
Bam and Dragic were both out. Like, of course, but Jimmy still took two off of them. Like,
yeah,
phenomenal.
Pretty good. A guy you might want to have on your team. I don't know, but yeah, that was. those are probably my three defining. Garpax moments, I guess. I will say, I want to say one thing real quick, though, is that, like, I have to give John Paxson a little bit of credit. There was a time early in his tenure where he was, like, one of the sharper I won't say this. I don't know if he was one of the sharper GMs, but he was at least smart enough to know who the worst GMs were and go fleece them. And as the league got rid of those guys and got sharper, he suddenly was the mark at the table and didn't figure it out. And it just didn't go well for him after that. But he had some good moves early. He had some early hits and then he fell off. And that's fine. But like when he tried to quit the first time, he should have been allowed to quit. So that we could probably blame on Jerry Reinsdorf.
Gosh, Jerry's just so loyal to a fault, man.
Yeah.
Laro, what are your top Garpax moments?
So my first one, I mean, it's a pretty popular one, I was a very huge LaMarcus Aldridge fan coming out of college. Like I loved everything about LaMarcus, his game. And don't get me wrong, like I eventually, you know, Tyrus is my boy, in Victor Criapa. That wasn't the move. I didn't appreciate that move whatsoever. Also the Kyle Korver trade, you know, for cash considerations and the TPE.
They never used.
And the other one is kind of a mix. It's like everything that used to happen, you know, when the press would press John Paxson about a certain move they didn't make or whatever. when Derek went down, it kind of, threw everything, you know, into a, you know, whatever. And when Derek went down, and it's like, Mike, it's like what you said, Chris, on our show. Like, actually, no, we just like personally, like when you're a GM, like you have to do your job. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to figure it out, you know, just like, can you imagine Pax doing what he did with it? Like AK figured it out with, you know, and I don't know. It just really frustrated me, man. Like,
Yep. Amazing. It's just amazing things. You guys nailed a lot of the big hits. I would just add waving Spencer Dinwiddie for no reason whatsoever. was one of my favorites.
RJ Hunter, right? They needed that spot for RJ Hunter, obviously.
They went. People always, for some reason, misunderstand and think that he was like the 16th guy. No, he was the 15th spot. They cut him just so they could have an open roster spot, which they eventually used on RJ Hunter. Who, if you don't remember who RJ Hunter is, exactly. And then, man, the three alphas era really pissed me off because Jimmy Butler and Nikola Mirotic proved that they were the two best players on that team and worked really well together. And as you said, Kevin, all they had to do was surround them with more shooters who didn't need the ball in their hands. And there were guys available that summer, like Patrick Beverley was available for a mid first round pick, which we use on Denzel Valentine. And he was making $6 million at the time. Like Courtney Lee was available from the Knicks for like $12 million a year. And he's a great shooter and a good defender. Etuan Moore, they did not re-sign. He went for $8 million to the Pelicans. He was phenomenal while he was here. He was like a really solid off-the-bench guard.
Okay.
Instead they went with like, the spacing pinchers, like the floor pinchers. Their starting lineup was Rondo, Wade, Butler, Taj Gibson, and Robin Lopez. Like the worst possible space in the entire league.
Not a single shooter on the
just
on
phenomenal
whole team.
The third one. Sorry, before you go there, the third one is the end to the Doug McDermott era was just as bad as the start, which is they traded Doug McDermott, Taj Gibson, and a second round pick. I don't know why, for Cameron Payne, Joffre Laverne, and Anthony Morrow. So they give up the three best assets in that deal for absolutely no reason. I just don't. And as you said, he was the mark, and Pressy just took him to task, just smoked him and fleeced him. So
I have to also bring up this one, man. Like this one, and I'm a big fan of this guy because he's from here, but this one, it made me mad. I didn't understand this one. Hit me a different way.
The Jabari Parker signing, for those who are just listening on audio, 2 years, $40 million. I mean,
that's gotta be.
I get the buy low, but the small forward thing, no.
That's an honorable mention out of my top three. But right there is every time that that Gar or Paxson did an obvious favor for Mark Bartlestein.
Oh man.
Which is that's what the Jabari Parker signing was. my guy doesn't have any suitors. Could you please throw him a bag? that's what you get. I mean, he had not proven to be worth that at all, and they were like, "Yeah, no, it's fine."
Phenomenal time. Vincent makes a good point here. The Gar Pack special was including the second round pick for no reason in every single deal they ever did. And then selling this at the start of their rebuild, that was actually the crowning achievement of the Gar Pack era for me. And I know the pick amounted nothing, but the principle of it, selling the second round pick and holding a press conference on the night you're doing starting the rebuild, like, what are you doing? What are you doing, guys? Just
people asked them, and they were like, "Well, we didn't have anybody left on our board that we really rated as draftable." And I was like, "Nobody
after 30? Like nobody?
Nobody? You could? There wasn't anybody you thought like maybe you could take a flyer on? Like nobody? Okay."
We also could have one of the best defenders of all time, but we decided to, you know, draft Marquise Teague.
Because Tibbs wanted Draymond.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yes,
my
he
gosh,
did.
Man.
Let's talk. Let's just real quick.
Oh man.
After Jordan Bell, Dwayne Bacon, Thomas Bryant, Isaiah Hartenstein, Damian Dotson, Dylan Brooks, Sterling Brown, Monte Morris. Yeah.
Monte's the one that really
second
hurts.
Second round sucks, right? No one, no one available to play.
Monte's the one that really hurts because they loved like bringing in guys with Iowa State connections all the time. And the one guy that was actually worth a damn from that program, they didn't draft him. It's like, well, what good is having that connection if you don't draft Monte Morris? Oh man!
Such oh my gosh! Point. I wonder if they just psyched themselves out and were like, we got to stop drafting Iowa State guys. Got to stop. Can't do anymore. It's like the one guy, and then Tyrese Haliburton also Iowa State. Didn't draft him either. So that was not Garbex, but
yeah.
Oh man, what great memories. These are all my memories as a Bulls fan. Like this year has been very, very different for me. Very exciting. So, but Kevin, I wanted to promote your show because you have been kind of on hiatus, as you mentioned. I know I've seen you quit Bulls at least 5 or 6 times on Twitter over the years, the last few years. You're like, I'm done with the Bulls, but now you're back.
The Bulls are back and I'm back.
So there you're starting up a podcast again, Dennis Podman. So let us know how that came about, the history of the Dennis Podman podcast and when it's starting up and what we should look for.
Yeah. So, Dennis Podman, was a podcast, that I think, that I started with Mark from Bulls HQ, Mark Karantsoulis. Shout out to Mark and Morten Stig Jensen. If you follow the Bulls online, you probably have heard both those names. Mort now is on the does the very creatively named the NBA podcast with Ryan Toporek. Mark does Bulls HQ, but the three of us. Had started a Dennis Podman, I think before the 2015 season. I think it was a Three Alphas year. I think I did like maybe 1 or 2 episodes with them. And then I got hired as an intern for the Dallas Mavericks in their analytics department. And I had to leave the podcast. And Mark and Mort kept the podcast going and made it, you know, pretty great for the run that they had it going. But that bull season, I think, broke both of them for a little while and they decided to stop doing it. Eventually or shortly thereafter, Mark relaunched the Bulls HQ because, you know, Mark is like me and can't really quit the Bulls. Mort, I think, has become less attached to the Bulls, but he's also still in a Bulls DM that I'm in and still seems pretty invested, even as much as he tries to sort of dissociate himself from the Bulls. But they're both doing their own thing, and I started to get the podcast itch again relatively, you know, as the Bulls started to make moves. I wanted to talk about them more, and I was the one that came up with the name for Dennis Podman. That was like primary, like my only real contribution to the initial run of it.
Which is brilliant, by the way. Yeah.
I asked them if they minded if I took the name and relaunched the name and the logo and relaunched it under new management ish. And they both agreed. And so I'm going to be recording the first episode of that probably tomorrow with John Wilms at John Wilms Words on Twitter. He's a friend of mine and a Bulls fan and writes about the NBA at Real GM and a few other places. We're going to be doing the first episode. And then I think I'm going to just be hosting and then having sort of a rotating cast of Bulls podcasting friends onto the show I'm sure I'll have you guys on at some point. I'm looking forward to it. And the Bulls being back made me want to be back in the podcasting game and not just doing my random hits on cash considerations where I come on like Eeyore and make everybody sad.
Which I love, by the way. I love it. It's like, oh, Kevin Farragut's requesting to speak. I'm like, yes, here we go.
Here comes a very sad rant.
Amazing. I just love how like you just don't give a damn on Twitter. Like you just say what's on your mind. You don't hold back. I love it. It's a great follow. You are, man.
It helps when you give up on the idea that you're ever gonna like work in the league or in NBA media in any like real capacity. Then you can just kind of say whatever you want. It's helpful.
Oh man,
it's the FU money. Yeah, on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's the equivalent of that. I don't have FU money by any stretch, but I do have FU attitude.
Oh man, that's why there's no one we'd rather talk to about this than you. So we appreciate your time. I know it's late, but if you guys do not follow Kevin Farragut on Twitter, please do so at NBA Couchside. Also, just a brilliant handle. I've always loved that handle too. And check out his work, Dennis Podman, coming soon within the week. Hopefully we have an episode out and yeah. Definitely looking forward to it. And we'll do it again in the future for sure. And hopefully with a little bit, more notice than we gave you this week.
Nah, I'm fine. I'm around. especially during COVID, there's not really much else for me to do. I'm chilling at home most nights.
Yeah, I mean, same here, man. I mean, if I'm not coaching my team, I'm either at home hanging out with the kids or watching film. That's all I do, man. I'm just chilling.
Same.
All right. Well, Bulls fans, thanks for listening and watching. Appreciate all the comments again tonight. And keep that big market energy up.
Yep.
And we'll see you guys in a week.
Be at ease.
See you.